From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in this afternoon. The fate of Juneau School District's Universal Free Breakfast Program remains uncertain after the Board of Education delayed a decision yesterday. The board will instead consider it against a list of staff positions and programs it may add to the budget following a higher increase to state education funding than anticipated. Nicole Herbert is the district's chief financial officer. She told board members at a meeting earlier this month that some districts saw an 8% drop in participation after free meal programs from the COVID-19 pandemic ended. She says it's likely fewer students will get school breakfast if the districts start charging for it.
Since Juneau's been providing universal free breakfast, I think a little bit longer than that, it's safe to say that we could probably see a bigger than 8% drop. But that's kind of an unknown factor going into this.
A daily average of about 600 students ate school breakfast this year. District data from the past two school years shows the number of students eating breakfast at most Juneau schools has declined. Herbert estimates continuing to offer free breakfast next school year would cost the district more than $220,000. She says one way to reduce the cost is to get more students approved for free and reduced meals. She told board members yesterday the district is working on communicating with families and processing applications quickly.
What I have heard is that some families, even though they know they'll qualify, until they have that actual approval, they're very hesitant to participate. And so making sure that we get those applications turned around quickly and so they feel more confident that they qualify for free and reduced.
The district gets federal reimbursements for students who qualify for free and reduced lunch. The process generally requires families to apply for the program. The board expects to meet on July 9th to discuss what to add to its budget, including universal free breakfast. Huna Totem Corporation shareholders adopted open enrollment last week at the Village Corporation's annual meeting. That means that lineal descendants of original shareholders can now enroll and receive their own shares in the corporation. The vote wasn't close. 71% of voters approved opening enrollment to descendants.
It's a recognition that we've got a future generation of leaders that are ready to come in and put their fingerprints on the future of not only the company, but of our culture and our heritage.
That's Huna Totem CEO Russell Dick. He says the board discussed opening enrollment for decades.
They just said, look, this is time to get this done. It's been 50 years of ANCSA, and it's time for us to recognize the future generation.
The Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, or ANCSA, passed in 1971, creating the Alaska Native Corporation System. It limited shareholders to those born before it became law. For Huna Totem, that was roughly 1,600 people. Until now, those original shareholders could gift shares to their family members or leave them to descendants in their will. But often their shares would be divided among multiple children, leaving younger generations with unequal shares to their parents and grandparents.
And for us to be able to come out and say, you are a regular shareholder of this company, here's what that means. You are the next generation of leaders for Huna Totem Corporation, the community of Huna, I think it's a huge, huge thing.
Each descendant who enrolls will receive 100 shares, the same number as the original shareholders. Huna Totem did a study to see how many people qualify and estimated that more than 1,500 descendants of original Huna Totem shareholders are eligible. SeaAlaska, Southeast Alaska's regional Alaska Native Health Corporation, opened enrollment to descendants in 2007 and removed its blood quantum requirement that limited the enrollment of people with mixed heritage in 2022. Huna Totem may be the first village corporation in Southeast Alaska to open enrollment. Several corporations throughout Alaska have made similar moves in recent years. And dozens of Juneau residents gathered outside Senator Dan Sullivan's office today to implore him to consider Alaskans' reliance on Medicaid. The U.S. Senate is expected to vote soon on President Trump's mega bill, which would limit Medicaid eligibility. For many protesters, the threats to health care coverage were deeply personal. That's the case for Chris Chang, who held a homemade poster covered in photos of a boy, one where he's in the hospital.
It's about my son and the fact that he's on Medicaid after a severe traumatic brain injury and the fact that I'm scared it's going to be taken away.
Her son, Henry, is 23, and due to an accident 9 years ago, he needs specialized care that he has to travel to Seattle for. Medicaid helps cover those visits, and without it, the cost would fall on their family.
And without that, he can't be independent. He needs these injections that he gets. He needs the specialized care for brain injury down there. When he doesn't get it, he's more susceptible to falls, which ends up costing everybody more money.
Chang's posters had the words, not a fraud and not a scammer, interlaid with photos of Henry. She said that's in response to messaging she's heard from politicians about Medicaid recipients.
My son is not a waste. He's not a fraud. He's not an abuse of anything.
More than 200,000 Alaskans are covered by Medicaid and the equivalent program for children. The mega bill, if passed, could make it harder for those recipients to continue receiving care, and some may lose insurance completely. And some key Alaska state legislators are pushing back on the Republican budget package known as the, quote, Big Beautiful Bill. In a New York Times opinion piece today, the state House Speaker and Senate Majority Leader say the tax and spending cuts package would throw budgets for rural states like Alaska into chaos. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
With U.S. Senate votes coming soon, Republican State Senate Majority Leader Kathy Geisel says she and Independent House Speaker Bryce Edgman see now is the time to ring the alarm bells.
Bryce and I were astonished and dismayed at what we're seeing Congress looking at doing to our Medicaid program.
Roughly one in three Alaskans has Medicaid coverage, and Edgman, who represents Bristol Bay and other Southwest Alaska communities as an independent, says the program props up communities throughout rural Alaska.
It's so interwoven as a whole into our entire economy out here, everything from air taxis to restaurants to transportation to certainly healthcare itself.
The New York Times piece he co-authored with Geisel is headlined, Alaska Cannot Survive This Bill. Edgman says changes to Medicaid and the federal food stamp program known as SNAP could push some families into bankruptcy and leave others without enough food on the table. Edgman and Geisel write that cuts to SNAP could force village grocery stores to close.
The SNAP program is, I'd characterize as one of the sleeper programs in Alaska because it does provide a lot of benefits to people that sort of escapes, you know, maybe the average person's comprehension of how important it is.
SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, pays for food for 70,000 low-income Alaskans. All the money for that food currently comes from the federal government. But the House-passed version of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act would, for the first time, require states to pay part of the cost of benefits. A Senate proposal would push up Alaska's SNAP cost by roughly $50 million, according to data Geisel shared from the State Division of Public Assistance. The status of that provision in the Senate bill is in flux. It was recently stripped out of the bill under the rules the Senate is using to avoid a filibuster, but Republican leaders say they plan to push it back in. Geisel says the changes couldn't come at a worse time for Alaska's already stressed state budget. Lawmakers approved an austere spending plan this year as low oil prices sent them scrambling.
It's going to be hard to find that money. How much more are we going to cut from the Department of Transportation? How much more are we going to cut from the Department of Corrections? How much more are we going to have to reduce our commitment to education?
The impact of Medicaid changes on the state budget is less clear. The House-passed version of the bill would reduce federal spending on Alaskans' health care by roughly $200 million a year. That's according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. Geisel argues that would force some costs indirectly onto state and local employees' health insurance, since more uninsured Alaskans would forego primary care and instead show up at emergency rooms. Federal law requires them to treat everyone, even if they can't pay. Defenders of the tax and spending cuts package say opponents vastly overstate the impacts on Alaska's budget. Much of the projected loss in Medicaid spending is linked to a proposed work requirement for adults without children. But the most recent Senate draft has exemptions for Alaska Native people covered by the Indian Health Service, people with serious mental health conditions, including substance abuse, and people living in areas where jobs are few and far between. House Minority Leader Mia Costello, an Anchorage Republican, said in a statement that the bill, quote, protects our most vulnerable while ensuring benefits are targeted and sustainable. But Geisel, who is a nurse practitioner, questions whether Alaskans would truly benefit from the bill's carve-outs.
What does it take to get an exemption? It takes someone applying for that exemption. And I can tell you that people applying right now, even for Medicaid benefits, are waiting months.
Another Republican legislative leader, Senate Minority Leader Mike Schauer of Wasilla, accused Geisel and Edgman of fear-mongering. He questioned the pair's commitment to reining in costs in the state budget. The bill is likely to span hundreds of pages, and Edgman says the race to pass the fast-changing bill by the president's July 4th deadline makes it hard to anticipate the consequences.
And I don't think anybody, even ourselves as long-term legislators, have a full understanding of what those impacts could be as they trickle down the entire economy.
He and Geisel close their opinion piece in the Times, saying the bill is, quote, risking our way of life to give money to the rich. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And subsistence hunting isn't rare in Western Alaska, but one recent catch is stirring excitement in Nome. KNOM's Wally Rana joined King Island descendants for a special occasion that celebrates traditional subsistence ways of life.
I'm making little slits on the towards the end of the hide so I could run some twine through it.
That's Nome resident Ben Jack. On most days, he's at Norton Sound Health Corporation's Behavioral Health Wing teaching residents how to carve ivory. Today, he's helping stretch out a polar bear hide.
It was already butchered. So then I asked Miss Caroline to grab some salt, and then we got the salt all over on the fur side. The salt will absorb any of the moisture.
Jack says he got a call to help out with the hide. He's of Yupik descent from Stebbins and was taught how to stretch seal hides by his father. But this was his first time working with a polar bear.
I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to be invited to do stuff like this, even though that I'm not from their tribe, but then Alaska is well knitted.
Caroline Brown's nephew, Jared Wiggins, hunted the bear while camping at Cave Woolley, about 40 miles north of Nome. She says the bear wasn't easy to catch.
They end up shooting it, and it wasn't the first shot that got it, but his cousin Jeff was two extra shots that got him down.
She says for King Island descendants like herself, it isn't just about the bear, it's about honoring their heritage.
It's a big celebration where we gather, we have a potluck, and we have an Eskimo dance, and there's a gift giving that we do.
Brown says the last time her tribe caught a polar bear was in 1987. The last of four hunters from that expedition, Raymond Peniatok, is still alive today. As a child, Peniatok went to boarding school in the Lower 48. He says when he moved back to Alaska, he had to learn his tribe's subsistence way of life.
Did all the grunt work, you know, like the young boys learn how to cut and watch the men, assist the men on how to butcher walrus for Ugruk and seals, and did all the grunt work.
He says for his family, catching a polar bear is a rare and special moment.
I feel excited. Good to see something like that. Been a long time since we done it, about 30-something years.
Brown says a potluck is being planned to celebrate the hunt. She invites the community to bring a dish and join in for the special occasion. In Nome, I'm Wally Rana.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 60 degrees and overcast. There's more rain on the forecast for tonight. Chance of precipitation is 100%. And that looks true for Saturday as well. You're listening to KTOO.